this week on The Inside Flap.
Wrote about in a book was like many years ago, was this this female character who was just awful. And people were like, oh my God, this is my mother-in-law. Yes.
For the second 8 counts, I'll crawl on the ground like an
awful.
I don't know what is going through my mind.
I'm so glad I wasn't there.
So I'm practicing crawling around. I look around. I'm like, yep, nobody else is doing this.
You are kidding.
No, I literally am thinking this is a good
idea. I'm picturing like Ben Stiller trying out now.
The Inside Flap is available on demand and every week on iTunes, Spotify, and around the world on theinsideflap.com. What more can we do for you?
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado. This is the Inside Flap Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Dave Medicus, and welcome to the show. Seated across the table to my right is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
And resting comfortably on the orange vinyl,
ripped vinyl.
Ripped. Yeah, we got a big old ripped styrofoam popping out of it.
Yeah.
That's Andrew Dowd.
Excelsior.
Welcome to episode 263 of The Inside Flap.
The Inside Flap.
Book podcast. Got a great show for you. We have our
book reviews.
Book recommendations. Of course, the always popular
audiobook of the week.
And our guest this week is, listen, this woman has written more than 20 instant New York Times bestselling novels, including the Edgar-nominated Cop Town. It's Karen Slaughter, the aptly named Karen Slaughter. She got a new book coming out August 20th. It's titled This Is Why We Lied, number 12 in her series featuring Will Trent, which also was just picked up for a third season on ABC, so congrats to her. It's always great chatting with Karen. We'll have that conversation for you in a bit, but first... So this week I took one dance step outside of my comfort zone this week.
Yeah,
as last week I was doing what I always do when I got a few minutes to kill. I'm mindlessly scrolling through my Facebook feed and I see an ad that catches my eye. An open, because you know I do subscribe to anything Denver Nuggets related is going to pop up on my Facebook feed. So I see an ad for an open casting call for the Average Joes. Now, if you guys don't know, the Average Joes, they're this dance squad. They perform once a month at Nuggets games, and they are exactly who you think they are. They are about 30 middle-aged men. They got dad bods. They are perfectly average, and they perform this choreographed routine, and everyone laughs at them, and they're so successful. They even performed at the NBA All-Star game last year in Indianapolis. Yeah, I know.
Wow.
Can you imagine? And this was the most important thing. On the ad, it said not only was no dance experience necessary, but it was actually preferred. So I said, aha! This sounds something that is right up my alley. Because I cannot dance, but I do enjoy being the center of attention. I figured this is a perfect opportunity for me. And I called up this guy.
Andrew!
And I said, hey, listen, you heard of the Average Joes? He said, oh, what? What are they, what is this? So I call Andrew up and I say, hey, you want to go? Andrew, you were game, right?
No, actually, you know, I thought it was a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
Was looking forward to do it. I mean, now, I didn't have any great hopes that I was going to do well in this tryout, but
right.
I figured it would be an experience.
Yeah, and me neither, you know. When I say I can't dance, I'm not like, there's no false modesty there. I literally have no style. I have no grace. I have no moves. I cannot dance, but... I mean, how hard could it be, in my mind, to learn a few moves and replicate that? I know I can do wacky faces, and this was my go-to going in. I'm like, all right, I'll just do a bunch of wacky faces.
Got the moves like Jagger.
I don't have the moves like Jagger. But I can do...
I feel like I would have thought the same thing. Like, oh, I could memorize a few dance
right?
moves.
How hard can it be?
Because I saw their moves and they weren't super difficult.
No, we've seen them
it
perform.
It was something that looked doable.
Over the years, we've seen them... They'll do a timeout at a game like once a month. We've seen them perform many, many times. They're not doing anything outlandish. They're not doing splits out there. They're men of... most of them have a certain, body type.
Got a dad bod.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Bunch of dad bods out there,
which I don't have, but we did look them up, and they're not all of, there are some skinny ones as well,
but the skinny ones can dance
a little bit as I was soon to find out. So Tuesday night rolls around, and it's supposed to start at 7 o'clock at Ball Arena. So I started heading, and we had a little event with the theater company, East Theater Company. I started heading over there at 6 o'clock. And that's about when I get the hot call or the hot text. Not even a call. I get the text from Andrew. Not going to be able to make it. Okay. All right. Great. So, at that point, I was like, well, it would have been great to do it, but I think maybe I'll just go home. And the closer I got as I'm driving towards Ball Arena, the more nervous I get.
Oh, boy.
And then I drive up to the arena and I see two men like standing at the door, and it's actually starting to rain at this point.
Oh.
And there's two men, big men, I say that, big men at the front doors. And I said to myself, all right, you know what? You don't need Andrew to be there. You can do this on your own. Be a big boy. Let's step up. So I parked the truck, and now it starts really raining. And I see in the parking lot there's like seven or eight of us all sitting in our cars with the rain coming down.
Oh.
And I think we're all just waiting for the rain to end. And finally, I'm like, all right, forget it. I'm just gonna run up there. So I run up there. The doors are closed. They're all locked right there, but there's two other guys coming up. So I follow them. They end up walking all the way around to the back of the arena. And we stroll into the, and there's a sign, Average Joe's. We roll right through the employee entrance,
Fine, that's fine.
MVPs walking through the door. And then when you get in there, there's like this, so I guess they don't want you to have a heart attack and sue them while you're trying out. So there's this huge release form online.
Sure.
You got to fill out.
A break an ankle.
Something. So we're all standing around. There's like, at this point, there's over 100 guys.
Wow.
Just standing around.
Did you notice if a lot of them came with friends or?
A lot of them.
Yeah.
A lot of them came with friends.
For me, the timing. The timing just didn't work out.
That's
great.
That's fine. It's no problem. It's not a big deal.
You would have been home late too.
Yeah, we were there very late. So I fill out the form, and then we go up into the we take the stairs up to the second floor where they got a table set up, and there's numbers on the table, like little numbers that you pin on. They got pins there, just like I'm running a race. I'm like, oh, okay, I can do this.
So this is like the Dallas Cowboy cheerleading tryout.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But the guys in front of me, they're like checking in, and there's like a list of names. I'm like, wait a second, what's going on here? Apart from the waiver that I literally just filled out 5 seconds ago, I'm like, oh, they printed that out. That was pretty fast. Okay, whatever. I get up there, give my name, and she's going through the names. She's like, I don't see your name here. I said, well, I didn't. I just showed up. It said open casting call. And she's like, all right, well, you go stand. She literally says, go stand over there, and we'll be right with you.
Were you panicking at this point?
Yes, 100%.
I would have been mortified.
Crazy
so
panic, because I'm nervous already, and now I've just been singled out as somebody who did something wrong. So I stand over in the corner while 100 guys come through.
You're kidding me. No. Everyone else registered?
Everyone else is registered to checking in.
Wow.
And then finally, they all go in, and I'm standing there, and the woman who said that to me, she had walked into the gym, and where the tryouts are is in the Nuggets practice gym. It's not the main arena floor. It's in their practice gym.
Oh, they've got a practice gym.
They do. You'd think, having just won the world championship a couple years ago, it'd be a little nicer and a little bigger. It's not. It's literally a basketball court.
Huh.
And that's it. And the walls, and then there's the big workout facility right next to it. But that's it. It's just like a regular full-size basketball court surrounded by concrete walls. You'd think it'd be a little nicer. Anyway, so I'm standing there feeling awkward and nervous, and there's two other people chit-chatting at the table. I walk up. I'm like, I don't know what happened. She told me to stand over here. I don't know what to do. My name's not on the thing. And he's like, oh, did you register beforehand? I said, no, I didn't know. And he's like, oh, yeah, just go to the Denver Nuggets website and register there. So I'm like standing there awkwardly on my phone. There's poor service. I'm trying to pull up to DenverNuggets.com. I can't. It's like 5 minutes have gone by. Everybody's in the gym there. I'm worried I'm going to miss the tryouts.
I had no idea all this happened. And it was just you that didn't do it right?
I was the only one.
That's embarrassing. Did I not have a click here and register?
Not on the ad. Or maybe, I don't know. Anyway, he finally shows me where to do it. And it's like, it's literally you're submitting a job application to work for the Denver, because it's a paid position. It's like $19 and a few cents an hour.
Wow. Oh, I see.
I know. Big money.
Yeah.
And, well, listen, there's 30 guys on the squad, so, you know, they can't pay
it adds up too much.
Honestly,
I think it's nice that you get paid.
So I fill out this quote-unquote job application as quick as I can, not really taking it serious, because clearly it doesn't really matter. The important thing is the tryout. So I go through that. That takes me
The important thing is you winning.
The important thing is I win. Fill that out. I go in the gym. And, of course, everyone's just milling about there. And there are, from what I can figure, about 150 middle-aged men in this gym. And you know, a lot of guys are wearing Nuggets gear, you know, to whatever. So I got like a wacky teacher t-shirt. How dumb am I thinking that they're going to think I'm a teacher. Hey, this guy's a teacher. Bring him on the squad.
If he can dance, they would.
That's true. So remember, they're not looking for a dancing experience. So I thought. So we start, we're milling around, and finally a woman, they got like this little staging, a little stage like off to the side, like kind of on the court, but center court, and a woman comes up and she introduces herself, and then she says, these two women, and they're actually two of the Nuggets dancers, Nuggets dancers are there. Mm. She introduces them, she's like, these two women are going to teach you 1 minute of choreography, and then I was like, oh. 1 minute? Come on, give me something challenging.
I would have been thinking 1 minute. I don't think I can do.
That is what I thought. I said,
no, 1 minute's a long time.
Well, this is what I was about to find out. How was I to know? She said, they're going to teach you this choreography, and then after we learn the choreography, you will perform it for the judges, and then we'll tell you who is called back to next week for callbacks. So, okay, great, no problem. So they get up there, the two women, and they're very nice, and they say, the first we're going to do, you're going to strike a pose. I'm like, I'm a theater teacher. I can certainly strike a pose. So four counts, strike a pose. Everyone's doing different poses. I'd strike a pose with like my arms crossed. Sure. And then she said that we're going to hold that for four counts, and then the next four counts, strike another pose.
Okay.
This is simple. And I strike another pose, and we're all striking other poses, and we're all scattered around the gym at this point. And I'm kind of like,
it was just 100 guys with two women?
About 150 men. Sorry, there was one guy who, as he was signing in, he might identify it as a Josephina more than a Joe. But okay. But yes, all men.
Okay.
And the two Nuggets dancers.
Okay.
All right. So we get going, and I do the two poses, and she says, now, next eight counts, we're going to let you do what you love to do best, improvise. And I'm thinking, what? That's not something that I like to do. I like to do improv, verbal, vocal improv, not dance improv.
Oh.
She said, do an eight count of improv, and then she's like, and then you're going to do another eight counts of improv. Improv.
So they're just lazily not teaching you guys anything.
This is what I'm thinking. I'm thinking, what the hell? I thought we were going to learn some choreography here. We got to do it all. We got to do all the heavy lifting ourselves.
Who's counting?
Well, the poses they're trying to check for natural.
Oh,
like, you know, what are you going to look like, right?
I guess.
And then this other thing, they're looking for natural like
ability.
Yeah, right. You know.
So everyone, I'm looking around and people are like. Doing some dance moves. Like they're literally dancing.
Anybody
like
doing the sprinkler?
Yes. Yes, there was. Yeah. I know, Andrew, you probably would have been doing the sprinkler.
Andrew could have done this.
I know.
Andrew gotten a callback.
I'm telling you, Andrew might have gotten a callback. I won't tell you whether or not I got one. You know, that comes later. Spoiler alert, I did not. Now, They're like, I'm thinking, okay, I can't do any of those.
He would have been so mad if you got the call back. Oh, yeah.
It actually works out great. Do you have any idea how mad I would have been? Because it's always the friend that you invite who moves on, who gets the job, gets the commercial, gets the part.
It just isn't my thing. I mean, I don't want to be in I don't need to be in front of 40,000 people.
Yes. Oh, I wouldn't either.
Yeah, no, thank you.
I do. I do. 18,000. It's just 18,000. Mm. But anyway, so I'm thinking to myself, okay, I can't do these dance moves, but what can I do that these guys cannot do? Well, I can jump around and make funny faces. So that's going to be...
Oh, no. That's not dancing.
Listen, I had to think, what can I do?
Dancers look your way?
No, I'm like towards the back. Okay, they've got their backs to us. They're teaching. They're looking all around. No, they're not. Good. Not that I'm noticing.
Okay, good.
I'm too busy looking at other... I'm trying to figure out who are the good dancers because I know I'm going to need to watch them.
Okay.
So what was the demeanor of the average Joes? What was the demeanor of the guys doing this stuff? They taking it serious?
Oh, and they're like, listen, they're in it to win it. Taking it dead seriously.
Because it's five Nuggets games you get to go to.
Yeah. I'm turning around other guys. I'm like, hey, man, I have no idea what I'm doing. And one guy goes, I'll just keep practicing. Okay. All right. Thanks. I'm looking for a little commiseration. But everybody was very nice and very supportive. So I figure, all right, I'll jump around and then I'm thinking, because, you know, Deb, the other theater teacher, she's always preaching levels. Make it interesting on stage. We need different levels. We can't have 10 people standing in a line.
Okay.
So I'm thinking, okay, great. For the second 8 counts, I'll crawl on the ground like an...
What?
I don't know what is going through my mind.
I'm so glad I wasn't there.
So I'm practicing crawling around. I look around. I'm like, yep, nobody else is doing
this.
You are
kidding.
No, I literally am thinking this is a good
idea. I'm picturing like Ben Stiller trying out now.
Yeah.
He likes that.
I'm like a parody of it. Yes.
Yeah. I wish I was been there to film it.
I wish you had too, Andrew.
Now, did you get any attention?
No, because at this point I have gone way to the back. I am in the far back corner.
So no one is seeing you crawling.
I don't want anybody.
Are you doing
watching
like a little lion when you crawl?
No, I wish I'd have thought of that. No, not doing the paw with the lion.
Did they call the paramedics at this point?
Well, listen. Let me tell you. When we got going, everybody had sweated through. I hope before the Nuggets players, before Jokic, our MVP, or Aaron Gordon, or anyone came back in that gym, I hope they disinfected it. The floor was soaked. Everybody was drenched through because we did an hour of nothing but practice. An hour. So anyway, so we do some improvisation or whatever. And at this point, they're just they haven't played any music. They're just counting. They're like, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Oh, so they're counting.
Hold
for you.
2, 3, 4. And improvise 2, 3. Yeah, okay. They're counting for us.
Okay.
And then they start teaching us the next four count. Mm. And the four count was it was a basic like you slide to the right with your elbows out and a shoulder. Oh no, you hold your arms out and you do a shoulder shimmy.
Oh, okay. I saw one of the guys doing that in that video.
You do a shoulder shimmy. You slide back with the shimmy, and then on count five, you bend over. You slap the floor in front of you. And then you throw both arms in the air and you wave them at the other side of the gym. So that was our side of the gym doing that while the other side was just in a pose.
Okay.
And then they do that back to us.
Okay.
So they taught us those 8 counts.
Okay.
And the problem is the woman, the Nuggets dancer, she was teaching it, but she's holding a mic at the same time. So she's only moving one arm.
Oh.
And she even forgot the move for a second. And it's very confusing. So that's when I started looking at other guys. I'm like, I found one guy who was like a hell of a dancer. I said, I'm watching this guy. Okay. This is my guy. I'm going to watch him. Didn't help. Because what I found out what happened is that they taught us those 4 counts or 8 counts. I said, all right, I got this. And then they put it all to music. Now, 1, 2, 3, 4, when they're counting is one thing. The music, and then it was like, doo, 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 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2. And I was completely lost.
Oh.
And then after that, they start with the next 8 counts. And so by the time I learned that eight count, I had forgotten the eight counts that came before it, the next moves. And all the moves, there was a lot of arms. There was a lot of gesticulating. There was a lot more shimmying. There was a 360-degree turn we had to do. Wow. There was a four count move where you bow to the audience in four beats. Yep, there's Teddy. You have to, like, ruffle your tail feathers behind you.
So, Dave, did you have to, like, lift anybody up? And
no, I was waiting for that.
Yeah. Little Silver Linings Playbook.
All this stuff, and I'm forgetting all the moves. I'm watching the guy in front of me.
Dirty
I'm
dancing.
Just doing what he's doing. At the very end, you, like, jump forward while moving your arms around, and then you point to the front. Like, you point in a dramatic way to the judges.
I love the point on the dance floor.
So that takes a whole hour. So an hour, we take one water break. And everybody is drenched. Like, I was wearing a hat. My entire hat was soaked through. Wow. My shirt soaked.
And Matt is probably arguably, like, in the best shape of anybody out there.
Yeah. But the problem is I'm jumping around. I'm crawling on the ground. So I'm, like, exerting myself more than other people.
Oh.
But, yeah, there's big men there. And they are. So we do all this. And she's like, all right. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to call out the judges. We're going to introduce the judges. And the judges come out. And one of the judges is the DJ for the Nuggets game. Paul's the DJ. So, you know, I'm like, oh, we got royalty in here. We've seen him at the Nuggets game for years. And some other people work for the Nuggets. And they come up. And then they're like, all right, here's how this is going to work. We're going to call you up seven at a time. And then you're going to perform. And she's like, everybody go sit at the end. I'm like, oh, you got to be kidding me. Now is when I'm like, oh, this is about to get this is about to get real. Because not only do we have to do it for the judges, but now everyone, 150 average Joes, are going to be watching us. So I'm like, all right, fine. I'm telling you, I have never, I am horrified. I'm literally, and people... During the process, we've lost probably about 20 average Joes.
Oh, they've left?
20 guys have left. Because when they would call up numbers, their people are missing because they've walked out because they couldn't.
Which is something I should have done.
So I realize I'm in the, because they're going every seven, so I'm thinking, okay, I got a couple groups to watch in front of me so I can really lock in this choreography. And I know at this point, I have no... This is not in my skill set. I've never learned choreography. I guess we did the Music Man in high school, Andrew. I guess we had to learn some stuff there. I don't remember it. Mm. I don't remember learning it. I've never, you know, we've never taken any kind of dance class. This is not my skill set.
No.
I couldn't. The further we got with the dance, the more lost I got. I could not remember anything. Mm. Nothing. And I'm even watching the guy in front of me. And I'm like, I'm kind of able to half replicate what he's doing in front of me. So I'm thinking, okay, well, I'll just be able to watch. And then they call up the first group, and there's seven guys, and they're like, okay, you come step forward. You're in the front line, and you guys are in the back. And at that point, I'm like, okay, great. I got a 50-50 shot of getting in the back row.
Oh, I'd want to be in that back row.
So I can watch the guy in front of me. So the first two groups go, and they're killing it, and everybody's clapping for them. They're giving high fives, and they're doing great. Like, they are on top of the choreography. They're, you know, not the best dancers in the world, but they have mastered the choreography. Mm. Call my group up there. I seriously, at this point, thought about just covering up my number and just staying seated at the end of the gym. But I'm like, all right, I'll just do this. I'll do this and get this over with.
I wouldn't have done that. I would have disappeared into the foliage and left.
I cannot remember the last time I was this scared.
I would not have ever done that.
Beat the first day in a classroom.
I was not thinking like, okay, I could do this and trying and then realizing like, oh, I can't and then backing out.
I don't know why I didn't leave halfway through.
Wow.
So I go up there and we're all sitting. And first I get it. All the way to the right because I'm 77 and it's the last number. So I'm like, okay, I go to the right. And then I'm standing at the end of the line and the woman goes over the mic. 77, you need to be on the other end. It goes 71 to 77.
Oh.
And then I'm like called out. So I have to run over to the other end of the line. And we're standing there and she goes, okay, odd numbers, step forward, even numbers, step back. And I'm 77. So I am not... My 50-50 shot was ruined. I'm now in the front, and the music starts, and all I could do.
Did you crawl?
Yeah, I did my jumping. I did my crawling.
You did.
And then the entire rest of the time, I like... I just like
you crawled. I bet
shuffled back and forth.
I bet they're still talking about you.
That's all.
They are still.
You remember the guy who did the army crawl? You. The army crawl guy. That's me. I'm Mr. Army Crawl.
Oh.
And then the entire time, all I could do was just shimmy. I shimmied and I slid back and forth. I had no idea what it was all out the window.
They were talking about Army Call Guy.
And then it was over and I stared straight at the ground. I did not look at the judges. I didn't want to see them laughing at me. I stared straight at the ground and they escorted us.
What if you
back.
Had looked at them while you were army crawling and seen like exchanges, exchanged looks?
And imagine and picture my face too. I'm like doing wacky faces the entire time.
So, yeah.
Here's the thing, Dave. It could have been much worse.
Yeah.
They could have actually called you back.
No, that's then you knew it would have been bad because there would have been only reason for them to call me back, and that's to mock me. Yes.
They probably would have the GM in there. Hey, guys,
check this guy out.
Well, you know, Sylvia got on the TikTok and the Insta to make sure
to make sure that you weren't out there.
I didn't turn into another ray gun from the Olympics.
Yeah.
Oh, but it was brutal. And then I watched everybody else go because you couldn't just slip out because there was only one door and we all stood and everybody was clapping. And even when I went back, they're like giving high fives and to me.
They were nice.
Like, why are you doing this? That was the worst thing I've ever seen in my life.
I do wonder if that will ever show up on social media at some point.
I don't know.
Did you sign a release waiver? That they could use your
know.
Image?
Probably. There was a very long waiver.
I'm sure they were recording.
Cause yeah,
I can see it. They'll do like an average Joe tryout on the Jumbotron.
I was picturing that too.
We can't go to the games,
dude.
You're right.
Because that would be what you would do.
Oh, of course.
And I'm sure they had you sign a waiver.
Yeah. Anyway, long story short, I had to sit through all the groups. They left the room. All the judges left the room, and For like 20 to 30 minutes, it was forever. I was like, let me just leave. I didn't leave. And then, of course, they're like, all right, we have, we're going to call back 55 average Joes. So I guess that's about a third of the people who were trying out. Mm-hmm. And then they just started rattling off the numbers. And when they got to 77, they went straight from 76 to 78. I said, well, see you later. And I slunk out of there. And that was that.
Wow.
That was that. But
wow.
I found out I just cannot do it. I cannot learn choreography. I can't do it.
Can you learn choreography, Andrew, do you think?
I don't know. I've never really tried it.
You and Katie ever taken a dance class?
No, and I've got no real dancing
skills.
You know, I feel like you're better than me.
Dave.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Could I have been any worse?
You can be worse.
No, you wouldn't have
you
been
You can't
any worse.
Be worse.
Yeah. No. Right. Would you have made the Jumbotron blooper reel? I don't think so.
I don't think so. Because he wouldn't have been army crawling around out there with a wacky face stitched onto his gullet.
I mean, they could put it on their social media, too.
Okay. You're right.
I hope they do.
Don't be this guy.
Yeah.
Be an average Joe. I'm below average Joe is what I am. Anyway, Laura, how has your week been?
I'll be quick, but we dropped Sylvia off.
Next year, I'm going to do it, and Andrew's coming with me. I'm putting that out there right now.
I don't think you should do it next year.
No, I'm not going to do it. What are you, crazy? I'm not doing it next year.
If you see this guy, do not let him in.
I think we would have to do dance lessons. Like,
yeah,
before we would do that, if we like did like dance lessons for a couple months.
Yeah. That's true.
You know,
you're right.
Yep. Well, I already talked to one of the students. I'm like, Stella, you gotta teach
Stella.
Me. Yeah.
Yeah.
She does the choreography for the
show. She's great. Yeah.
She said, Dave, I'll whip you right into shape.
I wouldn't mind learning either. No. I'm not good at it either, which is why you don't know because I don't like to dance.
Yeah.
So we're not out there going dancing.
No.
It's not our thing.
It's not.
Yeah. We're going talking.
That's what we can run our yaps.
So we dropped Sylvia off on Sunday at CU Boulder.
Yes, we do. What last do we got? Week, 3 days left. Three more days.
Three sleeps, as they say.
That's right.
So I have been, you know, last week I think I talked about the CU Boulder parent page that I was on.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, I've shifted.
Helicopter moms.
My attention to Facebook group. It's called Dorm Room Mamas.
Dorm Room Mamas.
So I'm a member.
That sounds like a dance squad.
I'm a member of the Dorm Room Mamas.
Okay. Oh,
so I just wanted to briefly go through what I have seen. I've seen a few like great ideas, a few way over decorated. This is from a designer, way over decorated rooms out there for girls, basically for young women.
Mm-hmm.
And, but the few things caught my eye.
Okay.
This morning, because Sylvia likes to look at it too, because it's highly entertaining.
Sure.
Just like the CU Parents was, it's kind of died off a little bit. Right. This one's taken my full attention.
Great, great. What do we got?
We saw a lofted bed this morning.
Yeah.
So, but what they do is moms post, and some dads, but mostly moms, they post pictures of once they've moved their kid into their dorm.
Oh, and what it looks like.
What it looks like. So you really get to see like, here's the, a lot of HBCU parents moving their kids in this week. I've seen a lot of like Morehouse, Spelman, like stuff like those types of colleges. Okay. I've seen a lot of different state universities I've never heard of also this week. But one mom had her son's lofted bed and she had like put a hospital rail metal, like what you would see in a hospital bed, like a crash cart hospital bed on the side of her son's wooden dorm room lofted bed. And she had a picture with her kid under it. So she has a rail like what you'd see at a hospital. And underneath this is her 6'2" baby that she did not want to fall out of his lofted bed.
That's awkward. That's
another post, all it said in the post was, quote, "My son thinks he will need only 4 pair of pants. That is all."
four pairs of pants.
And then she wrote, "That is all."
That is all. Yeah.
And then another mom who whose kid had a huge, huge dorm room. And all the moms are like looking at these dorm rooms and they're like, oh, you have another. There's a lot of single dorm rooms out there. Mm. She had a huge dorm room to herself and she admitted that she had paid for another bed so that her daughter could get a double all to herself. So she had basically paid for a kid's room and board, or I guess board.
Room. Board.
Room.
Yeah.
Board.
Yeah, room.
Double
so
room.
That she could get.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Her kid
could have a double wide room to herself.
Wow.
Can you imagine? It's so expensive. Andrew, we are paying more in room and board than we are in tuition.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't even imagine.
What's my, single amount? We'll get you a double.
But
we'll
the last one that was kind of interesting, which I think I told you about, Dave, is there Colorado Mesa kids moved in, last week.
Crazy.
Or maybe earlier this week. Mm-hmm. And it was a mom who said that her boy was in a quad, which is 4 beds, and you usually have a communal bathroom.
Right.
And his other roommates were girls. He was not comfortable, so she did get
and
him
And didn't
switched.
Find out until they got there.
He did not know until he got there.
He opens up the door, he's like, what's up, homies? What's up, roommates? So, wait a second.
So let me describe it. So I was in a quad.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And so basically you have a bathroom in the middle, and the quad is basically
like 2 and 2.
Well, no, it's it's 2 rooms and 2 rooms, but there's 2 people in each room.
Mm-hmm.
So altogether, it's 8 people, basically sharing the bathroom.
That's a lot.
Yeah. So I mean, that's what the quads are. So I mean, it's not.
So they're not sleeping in the same room.
No. So the rooms are separate.
I thought they were sleeping in the same room.
It wasn't this. The room that I saw had multiple beds in the same room. Might have been a triple.
Because
I showed Dave the post.
They were sharing a room.
There was like 3 beds in one room.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's male and female.
Who thinks that's a good
this
idea?
This is Colorado Mesa, which is right in Grand Junction, which I would have thought would have been more conservative because of where it is in our state.
That's true.
And we've been to that town.
Maybe they're just trying to get some Randy boys to choose their school.
This boy was not comfortable, I don't know any 18-year-old boy that wants to share. Like,
would you share your room, Andrew, as a college freshman?
As an 18-year-old?
Well, you know.
I will tell you. Who we're talking about
back in college. one summer at the beach, I shared an entire apartment with a bunch of girls.
But you were older.
I wasn't that much older. I was still in college.
College age.
Yeah.
But something
I feel like
different
you can handle
being
it
in a college
when
dorm.
You're like 19, 20,
but
20.
Even in that house, you're not sharing a room, though. You know what I mean? You're not sharing a room.
And to be honest, I don't remember where I slept there. If it was the couch,
right, and you probably,
I don't remember because
yeah,
I was working.
You,
yeah.
I mean, it was not like
pizza place nonstop.
Yeah, yeah, nonstop. So yeah. I would show up, I would sleep, and then I'd leave.
That's true.
And barely saw anybody.
So I was kind of shocked at that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And we looked it up, and there
Dave's like, "That's not true. That's she's right. lying." And I was like, "I don't think she is." And I was like, "No one lies in the dorm room, yeah. Mama's site."
So we looked it up, and there are some quote-unquote liberal colleges around the country, and that's what they're doing now.
Yeah, and so like CU Boulder and most colleges nowadays, most state college or whatever public, it's men and women on the same floor.
Right, yeah.
Which I have heard is safer for the young women that are living there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's like having an apartment and the guys live next door to you.
Yeah, yeah.
Three's Company.
Jack, yes, right. Yeah. Jack Tripper.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that was the big surprise. But I've been so enjoying the dorm room mamas.
Dorm room mamas, get out there, follow.
It's been a lot of fun
I want to do follow and like the Inside Flap podcast. How about we do that?
Oh, that's true. That's true. That Andrew, how have you been?
You know, it's the usual.
Big day for Andrew today. Big,
well,
big day.
We'll get to that, but I'll keep mine
brief.
Big day
for baby.
I'll save more details for next week. But
okay.
But basically, all our kids went back to school this week. So Dashiell's back at school.
And Dad went back to
Peter's
school
Peter's back
as
at
well.
School. Mary-Kate's back at school. Yes, and Dad's back at school.
Yeah.
The thing is, I've been, for 6 months, I've been working in this program to get into this residency.
Yes.
To get my teaching certificate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know what I was thinking. But
it's real now, right?
So anyway, I did like Summer Institute, right?
Yeah.
And I enjoyed the classes and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
Oh, you should tell everybody if you passed or not.
Oh, and so from last week, this week, so I found out basically 1 month and 2 days after I took the 5436 practice
test.
Exam.
Yeah.
At home, the invasive, annoying on-home test.
Yes.
But I did pass.
Yay!
So I got like a 77.
Oops, wait a second. No.
Yeah, I get a 77%.
Yes.
70 is passing, so I'm rounding up, I think. But it's passing, and this exam covers all middle school and high school science. I mean, there's a lot on this exam.
Yep. Yeah.
You know. So so I pass, right? I mean, so now I literally can teach. Like if I can find a job, I can, you know, I can teach. Now,
oh wait, hold on. You can't. What?
Yeah, yeah. I could.
You got to pass. You can't be in a.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can. If I found a school willing to actually hire me with the passing practice exam, I could teach.
Wow.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Now that's.
But
not,
you were not.
That's
a certified
not the program.
Educator.
That's called a teacher of record.
Okay.
I see. But I don't. I'm not doing that. I'm doing a residency where I'm working alongside a teacher, and so Monday I didn't know anything.
You didn't even know what, when you were going
to
start?
I hadn't been assigned to school.
Wow.
I hadn't been assigned a mentor.
It's Thursday today that we're recording
this. Right. And I haven't been assigned anything. So Wednesday morning, I get an email saying, we've assigned you a mentor.
You are kidding.
Right.
Me.
And so I send an email saying, oh, that it's great news. You know, here's my cell phone number. Well, next thing I know, I'm getting a call from my mentor saying, hey, are you ready to be in class tomorrow?
Good grief.
Right?
And did you say, heck no?
Well, I'm sitting there thinking
he
that.
He said the wrong thing.
But
why do you hear what he said?
But my mentor and the other person are basically saying, you really want to be there because it's the first day school and you want to experience all this, right? And I think they're right.
I mean,
but,
you kind of knew it was coming.
But it's like.
Yeah, you knew it was coming. But you told her, well, what do you think I should do, right?
Well, I said, well, let me talk to the wife.
Okay.
But you know, part of it is.
That's what they want to hear.
This is what I wanted. I mean, and you either.
It's what you signed up for.
You know, you've got to go full Monty.
Yeah, you do.
You know?
You don't want to go full Monty. In the
I'm not being literal. Yeah, not being literal.
You got to start. You got to start somewhere.
Yeah,
you
got to start. So, maybe I'll save details for next week.
Okay. Oh, nice. Look at that teaser.
I like it.
But today was the first day.
Are you tired?
You know, I am. I didn't sleep great last night.
No, I bet not.
Right? I mean, I was up and everything. I didn't sleep
great.
Tell
me about
it.
Welcome to teaching.
I left the house at 6:15 this morning.
Oh, brutal.
You know, and what I will say is, like, the drive there, it's like an easy 30-minute drive.
That's good.
Like country roads and stuff. But the two annoying things about the drive is I drive literally straight east at 6:15
right into the sun.
Right into the damn sun.
Yeah, that is a road to the sun.
Yeah.
So, Now, I had two cars.
No trees or anything.
No, not in Eastern
two
Colorado.
Two cars. No. Now, so one, there was one car going like 5 miles an hour under the speed limit on a road for like 8 miles where I couldn't pass.
Oh, no.
Right? And then once I get past that car, then I got a like a huge pickup truck with a huge trailer, horse trailer, trying to go like 20 miles an hour above the speed limit on like roads I don't know that wind and...
With the sun in your eyes.
Oh, with the sun in my eyes and stuff too.
That sounds so stressful.
You know, and it's like... You know, so tomorrow I'm going to looking. I'll be looking for an alternate route.
Yeah.
That's not quite into the sun, and you know where the roads are. Where the roads are a little bit better, but you know it's started, and there'll be more details to follow.
Yep. I will say this right before we got on the air. Andrew's like, "Yeah, I think I'm gonna tell him I gotta leave early tomorrow. Second day on this job. He's talking about. He's gotta leave early.
I love it.
The problem is because of the short notice. We had planned stuff as a family.
I think that's valid because it's short notice, and I feel like he has a right to say that. Like, hey, but so I don't know.
We'll see how that goes with
you
this.
You know, it is what it is. Yeah.
You know, I can't wait till we get him next week.
Are
and
you
he's
carrying
got
a backpack?
Full
what
week.
Do you do? Are you carrying a backpack in or?
So today I had basically a backpack.
Did Katie get a first day picture of you?
Yeah, with a sugar tute, which is a German thing. No, yeah, you should have. Should have done that.
She should have.
So I had, I had my backpack, and then I also had my leather satchel.
look at this
guy. Because I brought a few different things to prepare, like, you know, because I have absolutely no idea what to expect. I've never really been in the school. I don't know the layout of the school. I mean, I know absolutely nothing.
Oh, did you sleep at all last night?
I maybe slept 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah.
And you need to tell your mentor teacher that she needs to give you like a place. Had she offered up like a place that you could put your, like corner of the room that's yours?
No, I've got a place.
Good.
Okay.
But it's not in the room. It's across the hall. So the problem is like in the classroom, I don't have a desk or there's no place for
me.
So
you're just standing awkwardly while she teaches. He's the whole day long. He's just standing awkwardly.
Oh, yeah. That's bad.
She didn't even let him speak. Didn't even let him speak.
It wasn't, and I even prepared a presentation.
That's great.
Yeah, that's
great.
Professional. That's what you want.
But did I get a chance to
show it off?
Because
didn't show off your dance moves.
I think if the kids knew my story, right, it would help me
connect
with them.
You wouldn't be like the weird guy in the corner.
And that's it. And so I was just like,
and now you're the weird guy in the corner.
Yeah, you can't be. You got to tell her, hey, thanks for letting me in your classroom. If you don't mind, I got a little thing. I would love to introduce myself to the kids.
Yep.
Any normal
did she
person
point
would say
you out,
fine.
Or did they just wonder?
Well, she
who
said,
you
were. "Mr. Dowd, he's going to be, you know, he's a teacher with us
okay,
in the classroom." And
okay.
She didn't introduce me as a student teacher, which I would have preferred.
Oh,
in my presentation, I introduced myself.
I say
as a student teacher with a quote. You know,
they're thinking you're like the science teacher,
right? You don't want to be. You don't want them thinking you're the expert.
Oh no,
really.
Because I'm.
They'll
I'm,
find out. Yeah. Actually, I mean, if you're in ninth grade classes, then you're fine, probably.
Yeah. Yeah,
depends on the night.
We're
going
to dive into this.
More to follow.
We will dive into this. This is exciting. All right. Well, speaking of exciting, we have a great guest for you. Karen Slaughter is back on the show, and she's got a great new book. It's coming out next Tuesday, August 20th. It is called This Is Why We Lied, number 12 in the series featuring Will Trent, but it really can be read as a standalone. This one finds Will and medical examiner Sarah Linton on their honeymoon at a forested mountain retreat. They can really just kind of, they're looking to get away from it all. No Wi-Fi, no distractions, just the two of them. Of course, along with the other guests that are staying at cabins at this exclusive resort in the woods. Well, wouldn't you know it, the manager of the resort dies, Mercy McAlpine. Hmm. No, not just dies, she is murdered. And of course, it is up to Will and Sarah to figure out who done it. And this is really a classic locked room mystery, which I really enjoyed. Lots of suspects, a lot of motives, money, land, revenge, all the usual ones are on full display here. Yes.
Now, how remote is this place where they're staying?
Yeah, in the middle of the road.
You have to hike in.
You have to hike in. You got like a 2 mile hike just to get into the joint.
As a guest.
They don't,
So they'll pick up your bags for you and they deliver them, but you hike in.
Mm. Yep.
Which is kind of cool. I'd be interested in that.
All the usual things that you want out of a Will Trent mystery are here. Slaughter does a great job at showcasing and highlighting all the different players in the book. It is a fair play mystery, so we get to play along to figure out who the killer is. A lot of fun, fast-paced, cabin-in-the-woodsy thriller I found hard to put down. So here now, talking about her book, This Is Why We Lied. This is Karen Slaughter.
To go, but it was like, I gotta drive after dark. Can't I just write a check?
Yeah, I'm sure it would have been an amazing scene, but just the act of getting there is like probably going to the airport or something.
Yeah, no, worse, because there's only two roads into that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's why they moved the stadium, the Braves Stadium. One of the reasons that, because white people. But it was really like, you know, electric. I had friends who went and they just started crying.
I bet.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I probably would have too.
Well, it's great to talk to you again. We chatted with, we were talking to, your name came up. We were talking to Peter Swanson.
Okay. I thought it was like the FBI. Why? What
did you say? No,
it's all although good. We have talked to Comey.
That's true. We have talked to Comey, unfortunately.
No.
So we were, he said we were just talking about like making appearances or whatever. And he said, well, I'll tell you who you don't want to be on a panel with. I said, we were like, who's that? He's like, listen, you don't want Karen Slaughter, because she will make you look so, because he said you're so just funny,
you're dry,
and you got that dry wit.
Yeah,
and he said you just can't top what Karen Slaughter brings to a panel. So,
well, you never know which Karen's going to show up, so he must have gotten me on a good day.
He must have. Yeah.
Well, very good. Well, let's talk about your book. I absolutely loved your new book, the new Will Trent book. Goodness gracious. This is Why We Lied. Now, listen, this is a locked camp mystery, a tale of fish talk, tater tots, and cave cheese. Karen, what was it that inspired you to write this latest Will Trent installment?
Well, all those things, really. But the concept of, I love locked room mysteries. I love Agatha Christie. And I've never really written one. And I liked the idea of starting off with the murder. And then, we go back in time and we get to meet all the suspects, because there's a limited number of people who could have done this. They're all at this really bougie mountain lodge, or I guess it would be bougie considering where you guys are, right?
I thought it was bougie.
No, it was definitely
bougie. Okay.
The marble countertops and all
right,
that.
Right. Yeah. Very fancy. Yeah, but so, you know, if there's only a certain number of people between the guests and the staff and the family that owns the place that could have committed this crime. Hopefully we know it's not Will or Sarah. So that was a lot of fun to figure out just how to have them interview people and like who's lying, and are they lying because they're just liars or because they're hiding something or because they're really a murderer?
Yeah, I love locker room mysteries, and you got to have like a big, you got to give everybody a motive. You got to have a nice big
setting. The setting was really nice
for it. We're in the woods.
Yeah,
Wi-Fi.
I kind of want to stay there though. Without some of the folks there.
Well,
but I like the idea of walking in, of hiking in. I thought that was a nice, like a really nice idea. Have you ever been to anything like that or done anything like that?
I have, because we've got one in Georgia where you can just hike into it. We're at the foothills of the Appalachian Trail, which goes up the East Coast into Canada. And it's just like an extraordinary hike that I would never do because I know too much about serial killers.
Right, exactly.
Yep. And wildlife. But it was really fun to write about that. And I actually did kind of their vacation, their honeymoon without the murder. I was in Wyoming in Jackson Hole. And so I was kayaking and fishing and doing all this sporty stuff that gave me like a false sense of myself as a sports person, because it was like one of these places where they put the boat in for you and they tell you where to drop your line. And there's a sandwich pack for you. And at the end of the one day, I like caught three fish. I was like, wow, I caught three fish. And then I thought, okay, well, maybe you caught one. The other two was the guide saying, hey, put in over there.
Yeah. And then the other guide is right around the bend in the river, just dropping fish.
Putting the fish on your line. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, anytime you're out and they pack a lunch for you, it's not, you know,
no, Karen, but it's not wrapping it.
The idea of someone else besides myself packing a lunch
for me. That's the way you want to do it.
I don't.
It's delicious. Like when somebody else makes you a sandwich, it's delicious.
I think it is.
Yeah.
Oh, it's always 10 times better when you're out
there. Oh, we did. In Vancouver Island. We had someone pack a lunch and I lost my mind because it was
amazing.
Yeah, I had not made it.
So Karen, so when you have like a big cast of characters like this, like what are the, so for me reading it, sometimes I get like confused with who's who, but you do such a great job at introducing everybody and giving them, like, how do you do that? Is that, do you spend like a lot of time like taking care with all the characters so that we know who's who?
I think particularly when you're writing an enclosed mystery like this, but just in general, it's always a good rule of thumb to not have anything like a secondary character who doesn't matter.
Oh.
So every single character matters. Yeah. And one thing I do as a writer and I love as a reader is I play very fair, right? You're going to be able to figure it out. And when you get to the end, you're not like, what the hell? Where did this butler come from? Right. You really want to page back and say, oh, I can't believe I missed that. Or even if you do figure it out, there's always that pull to figure why they did it, you know, and how Will and Sarah and Faith are going to figure out who did it. So I have to be really conscious of those different layers to the mystery. And it was just a lot of fun figuring out those different characters, who they were in their own distinctive way. Mm-hmm. You know, well, one's an alcoholic and one is an enabler and one's like this really rich woman who's entirely defined by her love of horses, which we've all met that person, right? So it was just more a matter of figuring out what these characters are passionate about, because I think that tells you a lot about who you are.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you see me looking over, we have a puppy in the home. So he is chewing on something, but I cannot determine what it is. It appears to be fun.
Puppy, puppy.
Yep.
It's your shoe. It's just a shoe. Fine.
I know you're more of a cat person, so
I am, but I appreciate dogs. I just don't want one because they chew.
We have a cat as well, but he's locked up. So because the puppy's been going after him today. Yeah. He's not locked. He's in our bedroom. I mean, it's not like he's in a Hannibal Lecter type well.
That's really funny. Like that. Yeah. So when you, when I was a teenager or maybe a real young teen, I started reading the Agatha Christie's, right? And I imagine you probably did as well. When you decided you were going to write a locked room, did you go back and look at it? Did you try to erase that stuff? How did you proceed? I mean, I would have been incredibly excited if I were you.
Yeah, I was. And I did read all of them when I was, a teenager. And it's really interesting to read them, not as a reader, but as a, how did she do this?
Yeah.
It took me back to my college years, like when I actually showed up, when you had to explicate the text. And her plotting seems on the surface very easy, but when you get into it, it's actually not.
Oh,
and you know, one thing she did was she always killed someone who deserved it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I thought, okay, this is more of a lesson in how these are the tropes, and they weren't tropes when she wrote them, right?
Oh, no.
Everybody copied her after that, but this is like the source material and I don't want to copy it. So I want to make a complicated victim. And I want to make her have life and not be so deserving of being killed that everybody's like, okay.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to really put Mercy in that. I don't think it's any big mystery.
I was wondering. I didn't think it was either. It happened pretty
soon. Yeah. I think they say it on the jacket, right? Who killed Mercy?
Probably they did.
So it was just a trying to lean into these familiar things like, oh, no, there's no cell phone service. Well, yeah, but they've got Wi-Fi. Or the roads washed out. Well, yeah, people can still get there, right? And so that was a lot of fun figuring out and just looking at it from a nuts and bolts perspective rather than just a good read.
Yeah.
Did you use that map a lot? I love that map.
I like the map too.
Listen, if there's a map at the beginning of a book, I'm reading it.
Yeah, me too.
Did you?
I know where my nerds at. We all love a map, right? Like a family tree, a map. Something
oh
like
my god!
I just get so excited.
I know.
Fantastic characters.
Yeah. As soon as I saw the map, I was like, "Oh,
okay, we're in good hands here.
I'm gonna settle in."
Yeah.
She had a map. 5 stars. Boom.
If only people would do that instead
right?
of deducting four.
They'll do 1 star. There was a map at the beginning.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And the page was bent.
Yeah.
it's a lot of fun. I've done maps before, but this was so much fun because I love those old camping maps and Girl Scouts and, you know, the things that they have. And then at some point I'm like, wait a minute, I could do topography. That's going to be really cool. Right. And, yeah. and water, you know, gravity. So water is lower than this. And it's a lot of fun.
Gravity.
And then I got to the point where it was time to lock the map in and I had finished the book. And then I had to go back and have the copy editor make sure the map made sense. Right. Because when I'm writing, I can be like, well, I want Will to stand here so I can move this cottage over there because he's able to see this cottage.
Right.
And then it became a question of, do you change the map or do you change the text? And yeah, it was a lot of fun figuring out, you know, how to do that and how to make it work.
That sounds like so much fun. Do you ever frame stuff like that?
Sorry?
Do you ever frame stuff like that for your office?
I do. You know, my Dutch publisher always does such beautiful artwork on my jackets, and they did a similar version of it. So I've got that. Yeah.
Nice. That's really nice. Yeah. Your wall of.
I've got a lot.
And it was really impressive.
Awesome.
Yeah. That's awesome. With the summer camp. So you mentioned Girl Scouts. Did you go to summer camp when you were a kid?
I went to summer camp once.
Oh.
And it was like a Judy Blume story because I started my period. And I was like,
oh.
And my note home was like, I hate it here. I am dying. Please pick me up. Right?
Did they?
And I was so miserable. And all my friends were so excited. And I'm like, no, it is not great. It's like, and I remember saying to my dad, "Is this gonna keep happening for the rest of my life?"
Oh.
And he was like, "Oh yeah, I'm sorry, yeah." So that is my this tells you why my inclination was to create this camp and then murder people.
Yes.
Of course,
yeah.
So the best of times, the worst of times.
Did your parents get the note and then get you, or did they get the note, cry quietly,
and not get you? Not, I'm Gen X. They raised me like a feral hog. They're like, yeah. Go find a pine cone. Right? no sympathy whatsoever. Yeah.
It's really funny. They might have had some, but they weren't going to get in their cars and come get
you. No, they're not.
No, they're not going to change their plans. They were having fun.
That's true. Well, speaking of a change of plans, in this book, Will, now he's getting adjusted to married life, which I found very interesting. Honeymoon from Hell, by the way.
Yeah.
And at one point, Sarah, after observing Will, you know, he's diving recklessly into this murder investigation, seemingly without any regard for his own life or limb. She says to him, hey, guy, it's not just your life and death. It's also my life and death. I thought that was a really important point that you made there and very interesting to make.
Well, yeah, Will's he's been such a loner for such a long time, and he really cares about the cases he's investigating, and he will throw himself into dangerous situations. And I liked the conversation they had because Sarah's not saying, hey, don't do your job that you're great at and you love, but think of me and think of, because Sarah knows what it's like to lose someone.
Right.
And I do think it was an important conversation, not just like as a couple, but there's a difference between being together as a couple for Sarah and being married.
Mm.
You know, she takes that commitment and that legality of it very differently than I think Will does, because his first marriage was like a double dog dare, right? And Will doesn't really ascribe a lot of value to a government piece of paper. But for Sarah, it's meaningful. And I love the opportunity for them to kind of figure out what their marriage will look like, because there are times when Sarah's thinking, okay, I'm not going to be the wife who nabs him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's saying, I'm not going to be the husband who doesn't listen to his wife. And those are like really important things that define a marriage. And you know, if they bother you on the honeymoon, they're going to be the reason why you eventually murder them at some point. Or you divorce them, or right, whatever. You just got to either, you can't change them, so you have to change how you respond to them.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. I'm switching subjects greatly here.
Switching gears. All right.
Have you ever sat in on an autopsy out of curiosity?
I have.
Oh, yeah. You have.
Wow. Method writer.
Yeah. I didn't do it for a really long time because I write for entertainment, and I didn't want to feel like I was exploiting someone's life. And what you see on television is very different. You know, you'll see people talking over a body or joking or whatever. And so when I was at the Georgia Bureau of Investigation talking to some agents, and they said, "Do you want to see this autopsy?" And I'm really weird. In my life, when people ask me, "Do you want to do something?" I generally say yes.
Oh, that's not so weird.
Well, I mean, it ends up being like an autopsy, or I'll say no to ice cream, but yes to an autopsy, right?
Yeah.
So that was a bad example. I'm always going to say yes to ice cream.
Of course, we're all going to.
But it was very solemn, and the victim was an unhoused person, and they were trying to track down his family, and they were very, it could have been a very callous situation, because you think this man doesn't, you know, we don't know if he has a family, and there was no one in his support structure. No one, they don't know his name. They're not, you know, we're trying to identify him. No one's reported him missing. And they were just so very careful about it. And I thought, that is what I want to have Sarah be like. I want to bring that into it, in this solemnity and honoring someone no matter what their life was like, right? And if it's a murder victim, or if it's someone who is sleeping outside or whatever, they approach each one with that same amount of care and respect. And I think that's a gift to be able to do that.
Yeah. Wow. That's, you know, TV is
clearly
not true, Dave.
No, I know. It's so funny though, because television, so we all see dead people on TV
all the time.
Like, especially if you're like me and you watch the particular shows, right? But it's like, dead people who are actually dead look fake, and fake dead people look real.
Oh, wow.
Because really? It's like, you just did, and we also do all this kind of artifice around people when they die, right? And we see even natural causes, and we see them in an open casket.
Yeah.
It's like makeup and preservatives and all these other things. And so there's just so much artifice around it. It was really, I had to click in my brain, okay, well, this is actually someone who died and their life had meaning. And it was really something that I had to switch.
Wow. It is interesting, because when you do see certain things, our only reference is a movies or TV. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And
right.
So your brain does. Your brain constantly compares, you know.
Exactly.
Seeing things like that. It's really interesting.
Now, I do love how you, speaking of switching gears, incorporate a little humor, sneaky, snarky bits of humor in your books. Mm-hmm. And I did slap my knee several times. One of them was when Grandma Biddy, with great name Biddy, I love.
Oh, it was a good. It was a good Biddy. One.
Her son Dave enters the room, and the quote,
I like the line too.
Her face lit up like Elvis had carried Jesus Christ through that door.
That a couple times.
That's a great line. Which, of course, now we are contractually obligated to ask you. You know what celebrity carrying whom walking through that door will make your face light up.
I will tell you this with 100% accuracy. Yes. I lost my mind when I met Carol Burnett.
Oh, I love Carol Burnett.
I would probably collapse if I ever met Dolly Parton.
Oh my.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's a, okay,
but
done.
Carol Burnett was so freaked out by me. Like, I had my picture taken with her, and it was at the Los Angeles Times Book Festival, which is a wonderful event, but I leapt across a field to get to her, and she was like, and her handler literally said, "Miss Burnett, this is not a crazy person. This is another author." And she was like, "Okay." Like, that doesn't cancel it out.
No, it doesn't cancel it out.
Crazy. Yeah. So I had a picture with her. And I'm not kidding when I said I leapt across a field because my hair was crazy. I was sweating. And she's holding her purse like she's afraid I'm going to take her purse.
Oh. Yeah.
So that was a wonderful experience for both of us.
She is. I've heard her recently on a couple podcasts. And I feel like she's mid-90s now, maybe. Yeah. 96 or something like that. And her voice, because I haven't seen her, I've just heard her voice. Her voice is so strong still.
Yeah. I'm she's a performer back from when they didn't have microphones and they had to project to the back. I mean, the breath control is just amazing. She was in a musical that was on Broadway, right? So she's really got that vocal range.
She really does. Yeah. Because usually when you get, 80, after 80, you'll hear it in someone's voice, but not hers. Goes,
yeah.
Were you tugging your ear? Like, no, I get it. Come on, Carol, I'm one of yours.
No, she was like, I think we have to go. I had a picture and she said, I think we have to go. That's like my interaction with her.
Funny. What a great answer, though, with Carol and Dolly.
A great story out of it.
I think a lot of people lose their minds over seeing that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Gillian Flynn and I totally bond over our love of Dolly Parton.
Oh, yeah.
Every year we say we're going to go to Dollywood to meet her. Like, that's where she lives. We're so excited, right? Like, we're going to meet Miss Parton knocking on the door.
At lunch every day.
We're done. What a joy to be able to meet us, your goofy fans. You must be so happy. Now the restraining order I'm probably going to get.
Yeah, probably. No doubt.
Like in the female network of like, watch out for this woman.
Well, anybody who wrote Jolene can understand a good mystery or a good,
Yeah.
Well, she's done so much for reading anyway.
Yeah.
There are a lot of nicknames in this book.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a mixed feelings about nicknames because I feel like a lot of times they can be mean.
Mm-hmm.
Trash can.
Yeah. Did you grow up with someone who used nicknames? Were you ever,
I didn't get many nicknames. My sister got some mean nicknames, which really still to this day, I'd like to find those people and punch them.
Oh.
And they can be harmful and they can't, something like Biddy can be like just an affectation because it's particularly in the South, everybody I know who is second or third generation Southern has a Bubba or or a sister. I've got two women in my family who are called sister, and no joke, growing up, I thought that was their actual names.
I bet. I didn't know that was a thing.
Sister, Sissy. Yeah.
Sissy.
Baby. Sweet baby. Tabby, tiny baby. There's a lot of diminutive things for women.
That's really
awesome. And guys are like Bubba or Dirt.
Skeeter.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really funny.
Huh, that's interesting.
I do have an uncle named Slick.
Oh, I like that.
And he's good with the ladies. Mm.
Okay, there's always an uncle.
Good. Well, it's either you're good with the ladies or you're a small-time hustler. So you want to be.
Right. Yeah,
I've heard if you want to come back in another life, you want to come back as an uncle.
Oh, really? Yeah,
that's the way to do it. Uncle. Yeah,
I think so. Yeah.
Now listen. Let me ask you this. Interspersed. Oh no. Let me ask you this one. Actually, we're gonna go back, Karen. Oh. We're gonna take it back a little bit. There's a line. Because what I like to do, I like to quote lines that authors wrote back to them. So I'm gonna do that for you.
Is this a test?
No, not a test. So another line that had me laughing was, quote, he had a gallon water jug on the table beside him because no one trusted their kidneys anymore. Now this drives me nuts. I'm a teacher. Every time I go to a faculty meeting, of course, I'm drinking water right now, but I'm talking.
That's not water. That's Fresca.
It's Fresca. That's true. You're right. It's the water. What is it? Like, we don't drink when you're thirsty. We don't need to be drinking water every 5 seconds. What is going on? When the hell did this happen? It drives me
nuts. People, they're really worried about protein and hydration.
Oh, protein. The protein obsession is bizarre.
Yeah, and it's like, you sit all day. Why do you need?
Yes.
Or when they go to a movie theater, do you actually need 6 gallons of popcorn and like a big gulp for 2.5 hour movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, apparently. So, that was my way of fighting the power.
I love that little dig. I love that. I was right with you. I was standing up doing fist pumps and mule kicks all the way across the living room. So I appreciate that.
Oh, that's really funny. Throughout the narrative, you have letters that a mother has written to her son over the years. And to me, letter writing is kind of a lost art. I feel like I engaged in it when I was in college with a friend of mine. And she saved it. I didn't. She's a saver. I didn't save it. But stuff like that's really interesting. Are you contractually obligated to be a letter writer as a writer? Do you write letters?
It's not in my contract, but I do. I send postcards when I'm touring.
Postcards. Oh, yeah.
I love
that. And I have a correspondence with another writer she's an older woman and she writes all her books longhand.
Wow.
So I write letters to her. We talk on the phone too, but yeah, I love writing letters. I love sending cards. I'm the one who sends a birthday card and Christmas cards and that sort of thing, but absolutely.
Yeah.
And Mercy is writing these letters, but they take on the form kind of a diary. And that's something I don't do. I don't do a lot of diarying. Oh. But diary.
Journaling.
That's it. Sure. if you want to use an actual word from the English language.
Oh,
but it was a good way to show her as a human being who's very flawed and is trying. Because we do tend to, when people are victims of crimes, particularly women, the first thing that we say is, should I really feel sorry for her, right? Yeah. And there are all kinds of judgments. Like, no one gets to a hears about a man being murdered and they're like, did he deserve it?
Yeah.
Like, what was he wearing? You know, there's all these sorts of judgments that people make. And I wanted to show Mercy. She's complicated. She makes mistakes. She does really stupid things, but she loves her son. And she loves, you know, she wants to be good at something and she wants to have purpose just like everybody else.
Yeah. I feel like as a culture, we're starting to in some circles, get past the, oh, well, what was she doing out at 11:30 at night? Or why was she running at 4:30 in the morning? Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I don't know.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I do. I've talked to a lot of police officers and, a lot of them are more forward thinking, but there's still some who are like, rape doesn't happen.
Oh, you are kidding me.
Yeah. And I had a female police officer say, I've never investigated a rape that was an actual rape. And you're just thinking,
give me
wow, this was in a university town. So,
wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. You know, sometimes women are the worst sometimes.
Oh God, we're awful.
Right?
Really terrible. The worst, nastiest character I ever wrote about in a book was like many years ago was this, this female character who was just awful. And people were like, oh my God, this is my mother-in-law.
You know, oh, no. Oh no.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Oh yeah, my mom will be listening. Hi, mom.
Yep. listen, Taryn, are you excited for season 3 of Will Trent? And more importantly, when are we going to get a Karen Slaughter cameo? Come on. I mean, it's past.
I did a few pieces of her. I walked past one of the actresses, and I was under so much pressure, I forgot how to walk. It was just very stressful.
I could see that.
So I'm perfectly happy to be behind the camera and watch the pros do their jobs.
That's really funny. Like, does my hand?
You did like a little.
Is this
Alfred Hitchcock walk by then?
Yeah, that was it. That's enough.
Oh, that's cool though. Do you hear from new readers who have seen the TV show and are just now kind of starting the books?
I do. Yeah, I'm really grateful. I mean, I should always say the books are the books and the show is the show because there are a lot of differences, but there's a lot of similarities. And if you love the interaction between the characters and the friendship and, you know, the moral compass, all of those things, if you're into that, then I think you'll love either one.
That's great. And what are you currently reading? Any book recs from Karen?
Yes, I have this one here. I've kept
How to Kill Men and Get Away with It.
Oh, I have not heard of that book.
So if you're planning on killing your husband, do not have this book. Right?
I'm keeping that one out of the house.
That's a good one. And then I have this one, which is pretty good.
Oh, Vanishing of Carolyn Wells.
Those are my two recs.
Oh, that's all right. Good. I like that. I like that.
Any good binging anything good recently?
I love For All Mankind on Apple. It's terrific. It's an alternate history. I don't want to give too much away, but it's my favorite show ever.
Oh, I'd like to check that out.
Yeah.
Yeah, we need something. We've been watching Olympics, everyone. Yeah.
A lot of Olympics. Are you watching the Olympics?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wonderful.
I know. Got the runners on tonight, so I'm excited.
I know.
Yes. All right. Well, Karen, we absolutely loved your book. This is why we lied.
Yeah. Well, thanks, guys. I appreciate
it. Thank you. Have a good rest of your day. Bye.
Yeah, you too. Bye.
The All right. Thank you so much to Karen Slaughter. All right. Let's open it up. The library is officially open. Time for some
book reviews.
And let's start with
Andrew.
Wait a second. I got him. Yeah,
I'm ready.
I'm
ready.
Mixed up. Actually, you know what? Let's start with
Laura Medicus. Don't you know the devil
wears a suit and tie? Mm, I like that.
I do tell.
Yeah, new walk-up music.
Yeah, here we go. All right. That is Coulter Wall. The devil wears a suit and a tie.
Love it. Love it.
I do believe is true.
I think that's true. No. And doesn't he say he comes with a smile or something like that? I don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot. Like it's a good song. Yeah. So this book is called The Lost Bookshop by Evie Woods. So this book kept getting recommended to me on Kindle Unlimited, like over and over again. And I just kept resisting.
The full ad, like right there when you grab your thing.
Well, like when I go to like, well, what am I going to read next? It's like, this is what you might like. And it's always like pushing it. And I judged the cover. The cover's pretty, but I judged the cover.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was one of those like heartwarming types of books where like a bookshop saves a community. People come together because of a bookshop.
Sure.
And I guess because I have a cold heart.
Yeah. Didn't want to read that.
Hi, Taylor. Yeah. I really just didn't want anything to do with that, which is kind of weird. But I did think it was that. But I was desperate one night with nothing to read.
Yeah.
So I downloaded it. I started reading it. And let me tell you, I was hooked right from the start. So a young woman named Martha leaves her abusive husband in the Irish countryside. She moves to the big city of Dublin, and she gets a job at a beautiful townhome working for kind of a mysterious older woman who lives alone.
Mm-hmm.
So room and board are included, and her room is in the basement, which, you know, some people might not like, but Martha feels cozy down there.
Uh-huh.
So Martha meets a young man named Henry, who swears that he once saw a bookstore at this townhouse that has seemingly disappeared. Henry is working on a paper about a woman named Opaline, who supposedly was a rare book dealer out of a bookshop that seems to not exist.
Whoa.
But if it did exist, it would be at this townhome.
Okay.
So things get a little interesting when Martha starts seeing a tree grow out of the foundation in her room.
Wow.
And it seems to be leaving books for her, or maybe her employer is leaving books for her. She's not sure to read. We are also flashing back in time to Opaline, who herself was fleeing her older brother and a forced marriage about 90 years ago in Paris. So both stories' sets are very interesting. There's a feminist subtext to both stories that I really enjoyed. There's magic involved.
Oh, who doesn't love
some fantasy
magic
in here? It's not full-fledged fantasy if you're shy of that.
Yeah.
Just a little bit of fantasy. So this is a great read. I felt like I was in another place in time while I was reading this book, which is really special. It's called The Lost Bookshop by Evie Woods, and it's over 4 stars on Goodreads.
Splendid. All right, my book this week.
Dave Medicus. When we usher in chaos, just know that we didn't smile. Cannibals
on this island, inmates run the asylum. And that is Run the Jewels, Ooh La La. Well, I never forget when we went to see, who did we see when Run the Jewels opened?
We saw
opened?
Lord.
That's right, Lord at the
amazing
Pepsi Center, at Ball Arena.
Yeah.
She was amazing, and these guys were amazing. Love
they opened
Run
for
the
her
Jewels. Check them out. All right, so my book this week is called The Caretaker by Ron Rash. Now, I love Ron Rash. I've recommended him on the show before. There's another great slice of Appalachian small town fare from him. This one set in the small town of Blowing Rock, North Carolina, where Jacob Hampton, a young man whose parents run the local store in town, has to go over to Korea to fight in the war. He leaves behind his wife, Naomi. She is 17, and she is also pregnant. Before he leaves, he asks his good friend Blackburn to watch over Naomi while he's away. Now, Blackburn is a young man who has had the job of being the caretaker at the local cemetery since he was 15. He also, stemming from an event that occurred in his childhood, has a limp and a disfigured face. Now, unfortunately for Jacob, his well-off parents, they don't approve of his marriage to the young Naomi, and the town follows suit. So before long, not only Blackburn, the caretaker, is an outsider in this town, but Naomi is as well. Jacob has kind of a rough go of it in Korea, and the depictions of the action he sees over there are disturbing and yet also moving at the same time. But when Jacob comes back home, he finds, and I can't tell you actually what has changed, but everything has changed. Things have really changed. Now, Ron Rash actually based this story on a true story of a soldier from World War II, and he has said that that this novel, which is his first novel in 10 years, that this one is the hardest one he's ever written. I love him. I think his most famous book is Serena. He's just a master at writing these hard scrabble, small town, desperate characters. The tension in this book is sky high. Sometimes you just can't believe what you're actually reading, and you won't be able to put this one down until you find out how it is all resolved. Beautifully written, evocative of a particular time and place. Book is amazing. I loved it. Check it out. From 2023, The Caretaker by Ron Rash. All right, Andrew.
So this song is Hard Life, but it also features Ben A, who sings in the second part of the song.
Oh, okay, very nice.
So this is my second choice for walk-up music. My first choice had about 50 F-bombs in
the song.
That's
right. It was riddled with F-bombs.
I mean, only 50 or 60.
You wouldn't even be able to hear the tune.
I mean, after the first 12 or so, I mean, who cares?
Hey.
Yeah.
You're way too OTT.
Over the top.
Over the top. All right. Very nice.
So my book this week has a 4.5 on Goodreads.
Whoa.
It is called Ascendant Book One. It is written by Emergency Complaints. Yes.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Emergency Complaints?
Yep, is the author. Now, that is the pen name of D.E. Sherman.
Okay.
Right? But the book is Ascendant Book One.
That's funny.
Yes.
Yeah. And I love this book. It is a rebirth slash coming of age book.
All right.
Right?
Okay.
So you can kind of guess, I've kind of coined those subgenre names.
This book, you have.
This book kind of combines both of those. And I just can't believe, like, how many rebirth novels are out there? You know, coming of age, sure, right? That's classic.
Sure, yeah.
But, like, the whole rebirth thing, I can't get away from the rebirth genres, right? now, this was I really enjoyed this book. This one starts out, and there's an ex-Arth called Neuromon. Neuromon is he's what's called an ascendant. An ascendant is basically a near godlike being that is so far above humans, right? I mean, the humans would consider them gods.
Mm.
And, you know, an Exarch Neuromon is not just any ascendant. He is the premier ascendant. He is successful. He is, you know, cocky. And his hubris is going to be his
downfall. Yes, of course.
And so the book opens up and he is enjoying the good life. And so basically one of his, you know, when his nemesis basically calls him, and his nemesis is able to take the immortality spell and reverse engineer it. And so what happens is Neuromon starts to basically reverse age. He starts to get younger and younger and younger. Now, Neuromon, of course, is not defenseless. I mean, he is the most powerful. And so extremely powerful magic happens. Like, you know, stuff happens. And so what Neuromon does is he basically gets the hell out of there, right?
Yeah.
And he like reverse ages himself, so he gets back to where he is a young boy, maybe 9 years old. But that young boy ends up washing up on a beach, and that boy ends up being like thinking his name is Nim.
Huh.
Right? So Nieriman becomes Nim.
Okay.
But he's 9 years old. He's basically on Earth. He's not up there with all the ascendants. And he washes up on a beach. He has no memory of who he is.
Hmm.
He has a little bit of magic, right? He has magic. But he doesn't know who he is, really, other than his name. He doesn't know his history. Doesn't know he got there. He is, like, completely naked.
Hmm.
And so, basically, you know, a young girl...
he's the full Monty.
Yeah, he's lying.
Full Monty.
You know, as a 9-year old boy, he's lying full Monty on the beach. Anyways, so a young lady named Sienna, or Sienna, basically finds him on the beach, and she takes him back, and she's nursing him back to health because he's also, you know, he's got all kinds of like magic issues, like you know, like there's all kinds of stuff wrong with this boy. Like they're not sure he's gonna make it, but she takes him in. And Sienna is somebody who is struggling. Like, she herself is struggling to eat, right? To put clothes on her back. But she doesn't think twice about taking in this young, you know, helpless boy, you know, and giving him. And this is one of the things, like, I like about this book, you know, is it pits, like, good against evil. Like, here you have these really good people that are just trying to simply survive.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, you know, does Nim survive? Yes, he does. Now... is Nim's magic like everybody else's magic? No.
Can't possibly be.
No, it's what? Not. Yeah, shocker.
Yeah, that's a real shocker.
And so basically, you know, Nim as a 9-year-old boy can do magic that like people just can't believe that a 9-year-old boy can do magic like this. Now, everybody wants to take advantage of Nim. Everybody wants to take advantage of Sienna. And so Nim just keeps getting put in these situations. So what does he do? What does he do? He can like so he can fly, right? So he just flies away. He's like, basically, I'm not dealing with this. I'm just going to get the heck out of here.
Oh, nice.
Now he doesn't have any money. He's you know he's got no memories of who he is or how he got there. He's just trying to survive. But literally everybody wants to take advantage of him from you know for one reason or another. There's sort of like he goes to one city and there's sort of like. Thinking he's going to go to the Mage Academy.
Hmm.
Right.
But does the Mage Academy take massive money to go to the Mage Academy?
Sure.
You're darn right it does. Does he have
massive money? Can't just stroll into the Mage Academy.
Yeah. Does he have massive money? No, he doesn't. So there's an Oliver Twist type thing where there's a criminal lord who wants to basically enlist him and ends up maybe blackmailing Nim to work for him. There's a lord who recognizes Nim's talent. But he wants to indenture Nim to like 20 or 30 years of servitude in order to send him to the academy.
Mm.
And Nim wants absolutely like no part of that.
Right.
Now, this book is wonderfully written. It is creative, right? And a few things I'll at one point there's these thing called Frost Whites.
We're watching my parents' dog and we have to keep her locked up.
So there's Frost Whites. And these Frostwhites are these like energy soul-sapping
like
creatures
banging down the door.
Soul-sapping creatures, the Frostwhites. And there's another one is like a huge ice worm that is causing like this massive blizzard.
Mm.
And this young boy basically has to like find a way to defeat these creatures. But this book is inventive. It is creative. Of course, I'm already reading book two.
Oh, awesome. Sure,
book two in the series. You know, and you really get your money's worth, and the book's free. So, you know, but you still get your money worth. But it's Ascendant Book One, written by Emergency Complaints. It was the pen name of D.E. Sherman.
Very good. Awesome. And that's recommended by Andrew Dowd. Which brings us to the audiobook of the week. This is based on a true story, a memoir by one of my favorite comedians, Norm MacDonald, gone too soon. And it is read by Norm MacDonald and also Tim O'Halloran. And absolutely, just this is a brilliant send-up, an absurdist send-up of the celebrity bio genre. With Norm, you would always expect the unexpected, and this is just a hilarious work of art. Had me laughing all the way through it. Just some moments of absolute genius in here, all done by Norm Macdonald. We love his voice. I love listening to him talk. Just the way he talks cracks me up. Although there is another narrator, and he plays the ghostwriter, who like talks crap about Norm. It's absolutely hysterical. And it's based on a true story, so there's plenty of fiction in here. Not sure if Norm was a true morphine addict, like he says he is, but that's who he plays himself out to be. There's a whole chapter detailing Norm's plot to assassinate Dave Attell, who was Sarah Silverman's boyfriend, and Norm is obsessed with her, and a chapter detailing Norm's time in prison. So you can see there's a lot of fiction along with the nonfiction. Mm. So if you like this joke, then you'll love the book. There's a scene where he's describing books on the shelf, right? There's all these books, and he's saying, hey, here's the books by guys I've never heard of. William Shakespeare, Charles Dickens. There was one guy I'd heard of, Victor Hugo. Everyone knew him. He was the winner of season one of Survivor. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you find that as amusing as I do, and all of that kind of humor, you'll enjoy this one. Let's take a listen to a clip. This is based on a true story, a memoir by Norm Macdonald.
Stand-up comedy is a shabby business, made up of shabby fellows like me who cross the country, stay at shabby hotels, and tell jokes they no longer find funny. You show up in a strange town, next thing you're gone. Then another town, and another, then 1,000 more, then another. You're moving. Always moving, like a criminal drifter, getting what you can from a place and then getting out. You're never in one place long enough to experience anything but the shabbiest of love.
Audiobook of the week.
All right, there you go. That is your audiobook of the week, and that'll do it for us. Thanks to Karen Slaughter. We'll see you next time. See ya.
Adios.
Excelsior.
Where are my nerds at?